You might have to move close.
And I guess so. So I guess we're picking up our conversation about regular expressions, and we'll start out with the second series of characters. Is that right?
Well, last time there was some confusion, I think, about when you start a character class. It begins with an open square bracket, and then you can have a character to begin and a dash, and a character to end, a range of characters.
I see.
Which is inclusive of those two endpoints. And then you can also have another range or other individual characters. And then when you're all done, you close that with a closing square bracket.
Now, do those character ranges, do they have to be... Could you go, I guess, in from Z to A rather than A to Z?
No.
It has to be sequential.
To be ascending order.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then if you want to repeat that series, there is, I believe you can put something at the end. Is that right?
No. That may occur with some commands, like... In Perl, I believe, they're intending to have named subs expressions so they can later refer to them by name and say, give it like a class or a range a name and then refer to it by that name again. But as far as I know, that's not in any of the current Unix or Linux commands.
I see. And most of the time, people would be using regular expressions with a command like grep, or I guess it's kind of across the board. It's pretty accepted.
It's widely used in Unix because regular expressions are a sort of miniature language to allow describing patterns of text. Like we already dealt with character classes. You can also say, for example, character class by open square bracket A-F and close square bracket, and then like a star, which would say zero or more of those.
I see.
That allows a repeat, so you can have AA matches and ABC matches and A-A-B-B-C-C matches, but anything with it, anything, a character outside that range would not match. Like an H would stop the match right there. And so regular expressions have the characteristic of they keep trying to match the longest string they can, and when the match fails, they back up to the last successful match and say, that's it. I'm returning.
I see. Huh. And I guess the ranges you can use are both numeric and alphabetic and even alphanumeric. Is that correct?
Well, you can use all the characters and at least in some utilities, you can specify the characters for the range as an octal value by saying backslash and three octal digits.
Interesting.
That goes 0 through 377 in octal. Or you can do it in some of those in hex by saying backslash 0x and then two hex digits.
But once you found the match, would you know what it even was?
After a while, you get to where you can read the, at least the, I've gotten to where I could read the hex ASCII. I never got comfortable with reading octal ASCII, although there are people who do that.
That's probably a whole nother topic.
Well, I suppose the entire thing of hex and octal, and binary, those are all number bases. What we normally use the decimal system, which is called deca. Decimal because it starts with D-E-C-I, which is a Latin root that means 10. And there are 10 digits in our decimal system, 0 through 9. In computers, we always start numbering with 0 and go up. In hex, they have the 0 through 9 like we normally have, but then they add A through F as well to bring the total number of digits up to 16. That's the hex start of hexadecimal. It's hexa, meaning like six more than decimal.
I see. So getting back to regular expressions, what about if I just wanted to match a literal? So a certain series of characters in that order and only those characters.
Then you type those characters in that order.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Easy as that.
Yes.
And I guess adding all those type of things together, you can get to some complicated expressions that match very specific patterns.
Yes. What I have found is that normally what I do is start with something like SED that understands regular expressions. I either use SED or grep. And when I'm using SED, I use it to match the regular expression and then delete all those lines.
I see.
And then I've only seen the lines I haven't matched yet. So I can make another regular expression and deal with lines that weren't matched by the first one. And when I have no more output, I know I have regular expressions that will match the patterns of every line in the file. So now I can then decide what I should be doing at each one of those matches.
So in your experience, have you been able to write regular expressions to match just about any type of character sequence that you've wanted to match? I guess what I'm trying to get at is, has it been powerful enough for you?
There are occasionally things that regular expressions don't easily do, but there are extended versions of regular expressions that will do almost anything you want. In fact, with the people who work with Emacs, they have at their disposal, Emacs is written in almost entirely in Lisp. And Lisp is a pattern manipulation language from the start. So if you need more power than what regular expressions can do, then you can do something like go to Lisp, a language for dealing with patterns.
So maybe if you could talk a little bit more about the classes of expressions that regular expressions are not particularly good at matching.
Okay. Now, that's kind of hard to do without having something specific in mind.
I see. And yeah, I don't have anything specific in mind.
Yeah, I don't remember those.
But they occasionally come up.
Oh, yeah. Yes, they do.
And it seems, I guess, can you talk about how, what types of applications you use that support regular expressions or programming languages? And just some general comments about how well it's supported?
Grep was the first command line utility to use regular expressions. The way grep came about was because the original Unix had a program called ed, and ed had a command g, and then you slash and the pattern you're looking for, and the slash and the P for what you wanted to print out those matches out. Okay, well, that shorthand to write that out was G slash regular expression, or RE slash P. So over a weekend, Ken Thompson was, this gentleman was trying to edit a bunch of files and look for patterns in text. And so to keep him from having to bring in ED and split the file into small pieces that could be brought into RAM to search and then put the pieces back together again, he extracted just the string matching functions and sent the guy already knew G, R, E, P for his printing of his patterns. That's what he named the command.
I see. That's interesting. I didn't know that.
And so then later on, there was a need to be able to edit text in Unix and Linux. We have streams of text that are essentially going by this particular program. And occasionally what you want to do is take the string that's coming in and say, like, the string is file 1, file 2, file 3, a list of file names. And instead, what you want to do is change all the file strings to chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3, so forth. So, since that could be done in a pipeline, that required an editor that could change things as they come in on the left-hand side from a pipe and go out on the right-hand side. And that was SED, or Stream Editor, that does those as the stream of lines goes across. They get edited one by one. They get all the commands that SED knows to apply goes to each one of those lines.
Huh. And I guess in a lot of programming languages, there is support for regular expressions.
Yeah.
Are there some better than others, or is it, I guess, something that's standard and you either have it or you don't?
Well, since Unix includes regular expression libraries as that you can link against, potentially any language that can link against a C library has the access to regular expressions.
I see. So I guess maybe we could talk about some classic uses that you've had for regular expressions, some things that it's particularly well suited for, and maybe regular expressions in addition to the stream editor. Maybe you could talk about your experiences.
Okay. One time I was in need of compressing a bunch of data, and it needed to be essentially tailored for that data because I wanted to compress more than I could get with just zip. And this was in the days before gzip. Anyway, so I took the file and sent it through SED. And in SED, I said, okay, if I see a particular character in this class, that means I'm going to compress that character and the next character to a single byte. So I transferred any one of those characters in that class and the character following it into a single character.
I see.
And then I did several transformations like that, where I had another one that said, okay, I'm going to compress run lengths of spaces into a single byte, because I would use the upper bit on the byte as a flag that says these are compressed spaces, and the lower 7 bits would give me 128 spaces I could put in there. So I did run length encoding of spaces and the compression of certain characters in a class, and followed by another character compressed to a single byte, and some of the other characters, I had a some that went, it was like a 3-bit, I think it was 8 characters in my class, followed by a second one. And then I had a broader class that was different, that was like 16 of those. And the result was I could prototype the compression and see if I chose the character class to be a certain one, how much is it compressed by data.
Interesting.
And after I had decided what the character classes would be, then I wrote the whole thing in machine language assembler to recognize those characters and perform those compressions. And the result was I outputted compressed file. And the debugging of the whole thing, of the optimization of it, was done entirely at the command line of a shell prompt before I ever wrote a single line of code.
Wow.
So then I had it compress the entire file, and later on I had occasion to have somebody going in with the debugger looking at a dump of what was in memory while the program was executing, and he wandered across this one section of code, and he said, it doesn't make sense, it doesn't look right. And I took a look at it, and I said, oh, and I began reading out the text. He said, how do you do that? I said, well, I wrote the compression, and I wrote the corresponding decompression, so all I'm doing is executing the algorithm that decompresses it by what I see.
So it worked both ways. I mean, it sounds like you were able to compress it,
but and it actually did stored it on disk, because I had a limited space on the floppy disk that we're using. And so then when I pulled it back in, I wanted to expand it so that other people could read it, not just me.
And it worked all right.
Yes.
Both ways.
Yes. And in fact, at one time, there was a bug in the program where when they went to a particular screen, and then they went one screen forward and then went back, it came out as garbage.
Huh.
And so my first thought was, something is wrong with my decompression here. So I went back and wrote a little program that took each one of the compression and decompression, and I read in every file, every string in that file, compressed it, decompressed it, and then compared it with the original byte by byte to be sure that after I went through the entire file, I had no differences at all.
The gold standard.
Then I went back to my boss. I said, there's nothing wrong with the decompression part. And he said, he asked me what it was doing, and I showed him, and he said, oh, that's Kent. I said, what? He said, can't try to take a shortcut. You know that rule you told them all that they had to call your decompression part? And prior to this, you had just put the raw strings in memory. And to save time, Kent decided he wouldn't go calling your routines. He would just go back, put the pointer back, and display that string. And so he's displaying your uncompressed data. And so I went in with the debugger and looked, and sure enough, that was what it was. So we went back to Kent and said, you know, you have to put in a call to this decompression function, because that's not printable ASCII anymore. It's compressed data.
And so it sounds like you had tuned it a little bit using the regular expression in separate classes.
Yeah.
And so how did you go about, I guess, what was the nature of the data you were compressing? Was it mostly English text?
Yes, or it was.
Okay.
And it was
on a particular
subject matter.
Okay.
So that certain words occurred more frequently than they would in ordinary English.
As well as letters.
That's why I could not use a standard compression.
I see.
So I wanted to optimize it as best I could.
Do you happen to remember what the ratio was, compressed to uncompressed?
No, I don't. No.
I guess it's good enough that it worked both ways.
Yes.
You got what you wanted back. So I guess that kind of leads us to talking more broadly about compression in general and how it's kind of changed. And I believe LZW is something that people do nowadays, zips, RAR, those type of things.
Uh-huh.
Can you briefly talk about what is available and, I guess, some of the advantages and disadvantages of using those different types of compression?
Well, the original Unix commands that was called PAC. PAC did essentially run length encoding, not just of spaces, but also of other characters. So if you had tab, 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 it would compress that as well.
I see.
It didn't accomplish a whole lot.
And that was, but you said it was based on repetition?
Yes.
And repetition
run
only
is what I call it, because it was the same character repeated several times in a row, and the length of that was encoded as a specialized flag that said what to repeat and how many times.
So I guess that type of scheme wouldn't work so well with data that didn't repeat characters. Then you would get almost nothing out of it. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah.
So then, mostly for English or things like that, or what was it really used for?
It worked out really well for things like columnar text, where you had a report that has lots of white space and everything is arranged in columns.
I see.
So you have lots of spaces there to compress down.
With text files that are pretty, I guess.
Yeah. And then after PAC came Compact. Compact did Huffman encoding. Huffman is an algorithm that essentially learns the text by doing two passes. One pass to see what characters are in the text and what the frequency of them are, and then the second pass to encode them in such a way that the most frequent character only takes one bit. And then the next most frequent character takes 3 bits, and so forth. And actually, it goes up 1 bit per character after that.
And so that type of scheme works well on pretty much any type of input. Is that correct?
Well, it works pretty good, but the LZW algorithm learns and adapts as it goes. So it doesn't have to make a pass through the entire file. It's able to change its knowledge about which is the shortest character to encode right now.
I see.
and that's what makes it superior. It can adapt as it goes, so it's faster because it doesn't have to make two passes, and it's more efficient because it adapts more easily.
Interesting. And that LZW is used in which modern, I guess, compression utility?
Well, LZW used to be used in GZIP.
Okay.
But because there were patents involved, software patents.
Is that right?
Yes. The GNU folks got together and rewrote that to get around the patent, and apparently they were able to figure out a way to make the algorithm better than the LZW. Now, what it does,
leave it to them,
I don't
know. And can you speak briefly about TAR and how it works in comparison to those?
TAR is a tape archive command. And what it was meant to do was to collect up a bunch of files and their dates of creation and last modification time and so forth into a single archive meant to be out to tape, but later allowed to be any file, so that you could save them off to be able to restore them later, and they would come in and be assigned the permissions and the ownership of the ones that were sent out to the archive.
I see. So it's the difference, might, I guess you could kind of say, is that it wanted to capture not only the file, but all the attributes and settings associated with that file.
Yes.
That was the ultimate goal.
Yeah.
So basically to minimize the time it would take to put back that file if it somehow were lost or changed from the system administrator's point of view.
Yeah. It was, the name was Tape Archive, and that's what it was used for, is to archive the files that were on disk out to tape, so that in those days, disk went bad quite frequently. So what you had to do was reformat the disk and maybe mark portions of it bad, and then say, okay, now load the archive back in again, and the files would be there and okay, because they would not be using the bad parts of disk.
I see. Well, I think we're going to take a real quick break. I need to get something to drink real quick, but we'll be back soon. Sorry about that.